everybody. I'm Sheldon Fady. I'm an alcoholic.
What?
It's a great honor and a privilege to be invited out here to share this weekend with you guys. I want you to know, I want to tell you early on, you're going to know this by the end of tomorrow night, but I want you to know up front that I am not an expert on Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm just a guy that's been reading this book for over 20 years and sharing it with friends and sharing it with the guys I sponsor and listening to my sponsor. And I fell in love with this process because of what it's done for my life. And I think as I look out in the room, I think most of you guys are the same, right? The people that come to book studies are people like me that have fallen in love with the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous and with this process and what it's done for us. And it's mystical and it's magical and it makes no sense. I don't know if you've ever done this. I went through a phase, probably about 4 or 5 years sober, where I knew where the good dope was in the big book, right? And if you did it this way and you dotted these I's and you crossed these T's and we had this like this thing that we did perfectly, and if you did it perfectly, then it was perfect and you'd be as sober can be. And you'd be happy, goddammit. And then and I've started to learn over the last number of years in AA that God and spirituality is in the spaces and in the darkness and in the gaps and in the things that we don't know. And I don't want anybody to get the idea that if what you're doing and what your sponsor is showing you and what you've been doing to stay sober has a different flavor than what I'm going to talk about my experiences, that somehow you're doing something wrong. Because I tell you, AA is about one thing. It's about one thing and one thing only. It's about how's it going. If it's going pretty good, it's going pretty good. If it's not going so good, it ain't going so good, right? And what is successful sobriety? I heard a guy say this and it just floored me. It's being sober on purpose and happy about it most of the time. Right, and if that's the life you're living, then you're a successful member of Alcoholics Anonymous. But if you're sober against your will, like you hate it, but you're doing it because you're being punished, like AA is punishment for your alcoholism, right, there's something wrong. And if you're not happy most of the time, if you haven't found a spirit in Alcoholics Anonymous that allows you to breathe and have fun and enjoy sobriety, then there's something else that you need to do. Because isn't that why I drank? I remember my first drink. I was 9 years old. I was a little kid. I was with this guy called Barry, and I didn't know there was anything wrong with me. I didn't know there was a problem in my life. Now, I'm short, and I'm fat, right, and I'm this little Jewish kid in a non-Jewish neighborhood. A lot of prejudice, right, very uncomfortable. My parents are divorced. Dad split when I was 2 years old. My brother's a pain in the ass. I don't like where I live. We're a Section 8 family. I'm a welfare baby. But I don't know any of this is really wrong, right? It's just who I am and how I am, but because of my life, there's this tightness about me that I couldn't have told you about it. I just was like, I'm this 9 year old on the muscle, right? And this kid Barry takes me into this wooded area and gives me something to drink. And I didn't know until the minute I took that drink how much was wrong with me. But I tell you, for the first time ever, when I took that drink, I felt like, oh my gosh, it had been wrong until that moment. Right, and I took that drink and I felt like I could breathe, and I made a decision at 9 years old that I was going to drink as much as I could whenever I could for the rest of my life, because this is how it's supposed to feel. It's like you guys had been holding out, right? You knew the answer. The answer was booze, and you made me wait until I was 9. Which, if you loved me, right, somewhere around 4, you'd have passed me a bottle, right? But I start to drink at 9 years old, and I don't drink every day, and I'm not drinking. You know, my mom's pretty strict, but by the time I'm 13, 14 years old, I'm drinking something, taking something, smoking something, doing something every single day, because I just need that. I crave that feeling, that whoo. And I can't, you know, Don read the part of the book in Vision Few, and he stopped just short of where it says, we can't, after a while, imagine life without alcohol. By the time I was 13, 14 years old, I couldn't imagine what it would be like not to drink. In fact, it went further than that. I couldn't imagine why you wouldn't drink. If you weren't drinking with me in high school, You know, what do we call you? We called you squares. You're the squares. You're the straight. Stay away from them. You can't trust them. How do you trust someone that doesn't drink? How do you trust somebody that doesn't get that magic when they put that stuff in their body? There's something wrong with those people, right? I mean, you can't talk to them, can't deal with them, can't look at them. You know, they do their algebra homework, for God's sakes. You know there's something wrong with them, right? They're just broken people. They're just broken. Right? So I'm drinking something, taking something, and I love it, and I love drinking. I love everything about it. I can't imagine for the rest of my life not drinking. But then as Don talked about, what happens as I continue down that path is that I start getting these consequences. Little things at first, right? Like, I don't know, I miss a day of work. It's Monday morning and I'm late for work, or it's Friday and I go out to lunch with the boys and we have a few drinks and I don't make it back, or I spend my rent money. I don't know if I had any rent money spenders, right? Right? I spend my rent money, and spending your rent money is a funny process. It's the process by which, well, you have the rent money, you have all the rent money, you're in the bar, you're out of money other than the rent money, and you decide you're just going to spend $20 of the rent money, because if you go to the landlord with all the rent money minus $20, you know he's going to accept it. You could owe him a 20, but then the minute you spend the 20, you know he won't take any of the money. You might as well spend it all. Right? You just know. And you blame him, right? That son of a bitch, you know, he wouldn't understand, right? Say you spend the rent money a couple times or the car payment, or you make a few promises, and you start getting a little bit of trouble, but it's not a big deal. And it's not a big deal because of the magic, because of the ability to breathe. Because when I drink, something happens inside of me that doesn't seem to happen to people that don't have alcoholism. When I drink, it just makes everything better. Everything is better when I'm drinking. But I'm starting to get in more and more trouble. I get a DUI. I had a great career. I was, when I was a kid, I was a fairground pitchman. I sold Ginsu knives at the state and county fair. But wait, there's more. And then I ended up on, because of a weird set of circumstances that began with an earthquake in San Francisco, I ended up on QVC, and I was a national spokesperson for a company. And I was 23 years old, and I was the youngest executive of Kenwood had ever had in their history. And after a couple of years, they fired me. And when they fired me, now I knew why they fired me. Because we always know, don't we? Right? I knew. I'm a Jew, and Bernard, who worked at the company, was anti-Semitic. You can't, you know, the people are just messed up, right? And the racism and prejudice is everywhere, and that's not what they said when they fired me, but I knew the truth. What they said was they didn't want an alcoholic crack addict as their national spokesperson, it was unreasonable is what it was. To this day, I'm not convinced. I lost that job, got another good job, lost that job, got another good job. Now I can't get a job, I can't get anywhere to live. I've lived at my dad's house. He asked me, don't drink in the house. I drank in the house. He made me leave. I had a roommate that he wanted me to pay my share. I had to leave. I had a friend that let me sleep in his spare room on charity. He let me, but I stole. Stealing is a funny word, isn't it? I borrowed with the intent of replacing with no means to replace, right? But at the time, I'm not a thief. When I look at you, some of you are thieves. I'm a survivor is what I am. And you get me scared enough or dry enough or cranky, I'll do whatever it takes, really. And I did, and he asked me to leave, and now I'm in detox because I got nowhere else to go, and I'm in a homeless shelter. And I don't know how you go from the national spokesperson for Kenwood Appliances to a homeless shelter in 24 months, but I pulled it off. It's one of my proudest. I'm just straight into the ground. And it was everybody else's fault. I had a list of people whose fault it was. But anyway, so I get to this homeless shelter. I get to this detox, and I move into a halfway house. And I start coming around AA, and I didn't stay in the halfway house long. They wanted me to do chores and be home at a certain time. And the guy that ran the place was a plumber. I was the national spokesperson for Kenwood Appliance. I hadn't worked for 2 years, but still, I don't know who Punky the Plumber is telling me how to live my life, and so I left with my first paycheck. And what happened was the worst 2 years, 3 years of my life. Because here's what happened to me when I left that halfway house, is that I drank to get sober, to get sober, to get drunk, to get drunk, to get sober, to get sober, to get drunk. I was able to stay sober for about 4 or 5 or 6 days, 10 days on average. I got 30 days twice, and I lied about 60 days once, is the sum total of my sobriety career. Because here's what happened to me, right, is that I would not drink. And I'm not going to drink, and I would not drink. And why would I drink? I mean, really, I'm just not going to drink. I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to drink. I'm not going to drink. But here's what happens when I don't drink. Something inside of me gets just kind of, I don't know how to describe it. It just, I get like that thing, that not being able to breathe thing, that thing that I discovered the cure for when I was 9 years old creeps back into my life. And I just get to where, I don't know. I mean, the book says, in the doctor's opinion, it says that that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, and I knew it was injurious, it had taken away my career. It had taken away my next job, the last job. I'm homeless. I'm living on the charity of friends, sleeping on couches. I've been in a halfway house. My dad won't talk to me. My mom won't talk to me. My life's spinning out of control. I haven't had any intimate relationships for a long time. I haven't had any real friendships for a long time. Everyone's mad at me. I got warrants out for my arrest. And I can see by this point, early on I couldn't see, but I can see by this point that it's the drinking that like Don said, every time all these things happen, I was drinking. I can see it's injurious. After a time, I can't differentiate the true from the false. I don't know if the drink, people are telling me drinking is the problem. Right? Sheldon, you drink too much. Sheldon, you drink too much. And it seems like that makes sense, except for the fact that I've tried to be sober. I've tried to be sober. I've tried not to drink. And it doesn't make sense to me that drinking is the problem, because not drinking, what happens to me is what it says here, that they're restless, irritable, and discontented. And I am. When I'm not drinking, I'm restless. I'm just like, I just feel like I should be, I don't know what we're doing. And what we're doing could be fun and it could be fine, but I'm telling you, whatever we're doing, we should be doing something else, right? Because I just don't feel like, if you don't feel like you belong, and you're kind of squirmy, and you just feel like, ugh, right? It's just, how do you put it into words unless you felt it? You try, if you say one of your friends, you know, how you doing? Well, I just kind of feel, right? But you know what I mean. I get that uptight, tense, right? I need to change something. Something has to change. I'm restless and I'm irritable. Well, I'm not sure about that, to be honest. It's not me. I'm not irritable. It's you. You're pissing me off. You do a lot of things that annoy me. One of them is that breathing thing that you do. It's just relentless, it's constant, and it's in and out. But it's not, it's just, I get this edge on me. The world just feels like it's against me. It just feels like everyone's attacking me. It's like I walk in a room and I know stuff. I know you're thinking about me. I know you've been talking about me. I know you're in judgment of me. And you should be, because you know what? I know what I am. I'm not a good guy. I'm a piece of crap, but that doesn't give you the right to think the things that you're thinking. And I don't want anything to do with any of you. And I get this, right? And I'm restless and I'm discontented. And when I first got here, when you said that you are spiritually discontented, the guy who said that to me, he's still my sponsor today. I've only ever had one sponsor, right? This guy, 1996, we're outside the Kiss Club. And I have an apartment, but I haven't paid rent for 2 months. I have a car, but it blows blue smoke. I have a job, but it's really a bad one, and they're getting ready to fire me. I haven't had a girlfriend in I don't know how long, because when I drink, the book says that we're dangerously and disgustingly antisocial. I'm not very dangerous, but I'm disgusting, right? So, and when you're disgustingly antisocial, you're not very social. And so my life is, I'm 5 or 6 days sober, right? And this guy's leaning against his brand new Q45. I'll never forget. Dripping in gold, right? bent to freaking toe, dripping in gold, fine silk shirt, fancy jeans, fancy shoes, and there's a hot blonde waiting for him 30 feet away from us, right? That he said, hold on a second, honey, let me talk to Punky the new guy. I'll be right there, right? And he starts telling me that my problem is that I'm discontented. And I wanted to scream at him, if you lived in my life, you'd be discontented too. This isn't spiritual discontentedness, it's that my life sucks, right? I'm just, And this is how I feel. And I just, I'm not gonna go get drunk. But I do need to take the edge off. And so I'm just gonna have one, maybe two, three at the most, no more than four. No more than four. Because I don't want to burn my life to the ground, but I have to find a way to breathe. A state of abstinence, me not drinking, I feel like I'm being strangled. I feel like I'm being choked. I feel like the pressure of the world is on me. I just need, whew. So I go have one, maybe two, three at the most, no more than four. No more than four. But this thing happens to me where when I have two or three, it seems to turn into all of them. How many are you going to have tonight? I don't know. All of them. Until you stop me or I run out of money or I get arrested or I pass out or something, right? I'm just going to have all of them. I'm just going to have them all. All right, and I come to AA and I try and explain this to you guys, and I explain to you, first of all, this thing where I always seem to cross the line. I have too many. I go above and beyond. And at the top of that page I read from a moment ago, it says, we believe and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol in these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy. Manifestation, the proof that an allergy exists. An allergy, an abnormal reaction, a reaction different from most of the population takes. That the phenomenon of craving, now I don't understand phenomenon of craving. It turns out that's okay, because phenomenon just means something we don't understand, so that's good. Nobody understands it, right? But which is pleasantly a surprise for me, because you always act like, oh, I expect you have a phenomenon of craving. What does that mean? I don't know, but it's a craving, and we don't know why. But I have a phenomenon of craving that's limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. And you explain to me that what happens, Sheldon, is when you drink, when you have two or three drinks, what happens to you is that you will then drink against your will. You will then drink against your will, which makes no sense to me. Because I got to tell you, I stood here tonight, 21 years plus sober. I have never had a drink against my will, ever. So I don't understand that. It doesn't feel right to me. What do you mean I drink against my will? It sounds like you mean that I get a bottle of scotch, I take the top off, I pour myself one or two, three shots, and by the time I have the third shot, the bottle poof, grows arms and legs, right? And then it grabs me by the scruff of the neck and it throws me down on the table and it starts pouring itself down my throat. And the whole time I'm screaming, no, no, I'm an alcoholic for God's sakes. What's wrong with you? It's not what happens to me. What happens to me is that I start out to decide I'm going to just take the edge off. I'm going to have one, maybe two, three at the most, no more than four, right? We're done at four. And then the phenomenon of craving kicks in, and here's how the phenomenon of craving kicks in. I change my mind. And that is how the phenomenon of craving appears in my life, is that I change my mind. All of a sudden, it becomes a good idea for me to have 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. All of a sudden, it makes sense for me to do what I always do, which is burn my life to the ground. And I don't know what to do. Because I got two things wrong with me. I got this thing wrong with me where when I don't drink, life gets so uncomfortable. It starts out at boring. It starts out where the color's gone. It starts out at you know, well, you know, I'm staying sober, and it's just, you know, it's great. I'm so glad I'm sober. Oh, my God, how long am I sober now? Oh, God, I'm sober forever. 4 days. Oh, my God, right? But by the time 8 days comes, it's like, oh, my God, I'm sober. I can't believe I'm sober. Is this what sober's going to be like? Some guy at a meeting says he's got 40 years of sobriety, and you clap. And I think, you poor bastard. You've, because I just imagine you felt 8 days sober for 40 years, right? I can't imagine what that would be like. I want to kill something. I mean, I'm 8 days sober, and I'm just right? Because what I think, this is what I think. I think when you say, because this is my favorite AA thing, right? You say to me, you know, Sheldon, don't worry about staying sober forever. In AA, we don't stay sober forever. We stay sober, and you say this like it's good news. We stay sober one day at a time. And here's what it sounds like to me when I'm new. Sheldon, if you come to AA, and you do everything we have to offer, you stack chairs, you help newcomers, you do, you know, you read out of the book, you share in meetings, you do everything, do it all, get a sponsor, get a home group, do everything. You can stay sober one day at a time. One long, miserable, painful day at a time. You too can suffer in Alcoholics Anonymous with us one day at a time. And if I say to you, I can't do that, you say, don't worry. If you can't do it one day at a time, stick with us. You can do it 1 minute at a time. And I just want to run out of the room screaming, ah! I can't stay sober because of what it feels like to be sober. And I can't drink because when I drink, I always burn my life to the ground. I'm stuck. I'm in a trap I can't spring. And what I have to understand is that that is the essence of alcoholism. We're going to talk, and I've made this mistake for years. We're going to talk in steps 6 and 7 and 10 and 11. We're going to talk about the unmanageability of the sober alcoholic. But I tell you, when I was new, if you'd have talked to me about the unmanageability as a newcomer, the way that you need to talk to me now as a guy with some time, you'd have lost me. Because talking to me about sober unmanageability when I'm new makes no sense. I've never been sober. All right? The unmanageability for the newcomer is this. I know I should stop, and I can't. I know better. I should do better, but I can't. I know. I know, and I've tried, and you think you hate me, you should see how I hate me. I can't. I want to, and I can't. I should want to more, and I don't. I am stuck. And it's so important that I understand what the problem is. Because when I was new for the first couple of 3 years that I was going in and out of here, I didn't understand the problem. Here's what I thought the problem was. I thought the problem was that I didn't have enough money. See, if you're new and you're here because you don't have enough money and that's what has you going to Alcoholics Anonymous, I got great news for you. Stick around a little bit, you'll get some money. But then the problem will be solved, you'll stop coming, and if you have alcoholism, you will have another flare-up of untreated alcoholism and you will drink again. If the problem is she's mad at you or he's mad at you, if that's why you're here, I got great news. Come to a few meetings. They get very impressed very quickly. They're easy, right? That's why they're with us, because they're easily impressed, right? And so it's true. If you show up here for a half a dozen meetings and you don't drink for a week, they'll just be so over the moon and delighted that they'll let you back in the big bed. Oh my God, you're doing so good, honey. And you'll be back in the big bed and you'll quit coming here. And then you know what's going to happen. She's going to cut it up in your sleep. Because you're going to drink again. Because that's what's going to happen, right? That's what's going to happen. If it's the warrants, you're going to end up in prison. Because the warrants will go away. and then you'll drink again. See, Alcoholics Anonymous will solve any problem you bring to it. I have brought unemployment to AA, and very quickly I've gotten a job. I brought homelessness to AA, and very quickly I've gotten somewhere to sleep. I brought being broke to AA, and very quickly I've had a few dollars in my pocket. I brought loneliness to AA, and very quickly, you know, I found love on the AA campus, right? I brought every problem in the world to Alcoholics Anonymous, and every one of those problems has been solved here because we're a community of people. And anytime, any community of people, you get together, if you join the Masonic Lodge, they'll help you find jobs and employment. I mean, it's just a community of people. But the thing is that that's not really my problem. My problem is this, and until I understand this, I'll never get relief. My problem is this. In a state of abstinence, I will feel so empty and so alone and so afraid and so vacant, and a hole will open up inside of me spiritually that is impossible to fill with anything. And it will drive me to this point of uncomfortability where I will, in desperation, even though I know I shouldn't, even though I know I will burn my life to the ground, I will be driven to drink again. Regardless of my experience, I will be driven to drink again, and I don't know when. Could be this week, next month, but I do it again. I'm a do-it-again guy. 3 years in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, drinking to get sober, to get loaded, over and over again. No matter what the outside circumstances were, at some point the vacancy inside me was so great that I would drink again. And if that was all that was wrong with me, it would be fine. I'd be like a character from a 1950s movie. Tough day at the office, honey, pour me a double. Right? I'd have a, oh, that feels so wonderful. Now let's go to bed, raise the kids, go on vacation, blah, 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 blah. But the problem is that I have that double. I got this other thing wrong with me. And what happens, and I can't explain why, it's almost like it's a phenomenon, for God's sakes, right? I don't understand why, but for some reason, when I have those couple of drinks, I have a couple more, and then a couple more, and a couple more, and a couple more, and I burn my life to the ground. And this is what is wrong with me. I have a physical allergy to alcohol that makes me drink more than I intend to drink. I have a spiritual malady that when I am in a state of abstinence without beverage alcohol or any of the other things that we do around here to fill the vacancy, untreated, that feeling, that empty, lonely, fresh, will drive me to drink again. And when you put both of them together, I find myself in what my sponsor calls a trap I cannot spring. I am doomed to get sober, to get loaded, to get sober, to get loaded, to get sober, to get loaded. There's a funny line in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous where it says that we will go on to the bitter end, blotting out our intolerable existence. I never met anyone that could do that. Because don't you always run out of money, right? Or physically get sick where you end up not able to drink? At some point, you know the cruelest thing about alcoholism is at some point you wind up sober. Going, oh my God, I did it again. I just want to kill myself. I need a drink. So I'm stuck. And it is this stuckness that I suffer from. And if you're stuck, if you're new and if you're stuck, what the rest of the steps are designed to do, I wish, I don't wish now, but early on I used to wish that there was a way to cure the phenomenon of craving, right? Wouldn't that be great? Take two of these and you will be able to stop at six, right? I mean, right? Snort one up, but whatever, right? The problem with that is that if there was a pill, imagine this, you've all heard this, right? Imagine this. If there was a pill that meant you could drink four drinks successfully and not burn your life to the ground, what's the first thing you're thinking? What would two pills do? Right? What would two pills? If I ground them up and snorted them, right? I mean, that's what I want to know, right? If I cook them, right? If I add baking soda, then what happens, right? I want to know. So we can't treat that. So what do we treat here? What are the other 11 steps designed to treat? That vacant, squirmy, uncomfortable, lonely, absent, empty feeling that I get in a state of absence that drives me to drink again. That's what we treat here. And I think, in my experience, we treat it relatively successfully. We don't treat it perfectly. That's why we have steps 10 and 11. Right? Because stuff gets through the cracks. But we treat it pretty damn well. Well enough for a guy like me that couldn't stay sober 21 days to be able to be sober 21 years. Let's do this, guys. It is 5 after. How about we take a break till 4:15? right? Now, before we leave, I want you guys to know, let's make it 20 after, because it's almost 10 after, 20 after, but let's try something new.
No more than 22 after.
Let's do, I don't know about anywhere, about Alabama, but everywhere else when we say 20 after, it's like half after. Let's try do a thing in Alabama where we're back at 20 after.